It is another episode of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. Welcome in, Ben and Kaylee with you once again. We're continuing to attempt to remain sane throughout the pandemic. And one way we're doing that is by bringing on some really smart guests. And Kaylee, we're not only are we bringing on two different guests today, but we're bringing on guests that we both know, who have done a lot of great things in the VF field. And highly anticipated guests, I have to say, and doctors Anisha Dua and Kevin Byram. So should be a blast today.
It should be. I'm excited. I like to nerd out on what all the doctors are up to. But it'll be interesting because we're going to talk to them really about how rheumatology has changed even in the last few months, given the pandemic, what that looks like for vasculitis treatment. We're going to talk a little bit about the new viral program on rheumatology education virtually. So a lot of good things to come in this episode.
Yeah, and looking at our guest today, we have Dr. Dua, who is a professor at Northwestern in Chicago. That's where she'll join us from. And Dr. Byram, same thing at Vanderbilt. So he joins us, and he's been a medical resident there, and he has been heavily involved, was a fellow through the VF as well. So he is in Nashville, where they join us. We'll talk as well about just a really cool, if you haven't heard about it, I'm guessing if you're a medical professional and you're involved in rheumatology, you've most likely heard about the program that Dr. Dua really helped launch, the Virtual Rheumatology Learning Collaborative, which I will mention that its acronym is VIRAL, which is just brilliant on behalf of Dr. Dua for coming up with that. But anyway, it's essentially this virtual online program that has been kind of groundbreaking throughout the pandemic. And so I want to get into that as well with Dr. Dua, and Dr. Byram's had some involvement in that as well. So that's our episode coming up. Hope you really enjoy it. It is part of our continuing summer into fall series of guests, and this should be a lot of fun. So let's get to it. Doctors Anisha Dua and Kevin Byram up next here on Vasculitis Visionaries. All right, let's welcome in our guests now, in Doctors Anisha Dua, joining us from Chicago, and Kevin Byram from great city of Nashville, where I may or may not have, Kaylee, spent a weekend or two that I barely remember in the past. But you know, it's all good. We're getting it's great, as we said in our intro, having multiple positions on, and two of the newer members. I don't know if it's technically newest, but newer members of the VF board. So a pair of medical professionals who've done a lot in the community, and we're really excited to have you guys on. I know it's been a crazy time. Dr. Byram, I know you just got back from vacation, so I'm sure that was exciting. And yeah. We're excited to have you both on. I'll start with what we wanted to go in, as we touched on in our intro, is the viral program that was a really impressive undertaking that has been ongoing since the start of the pandemic. And I know you've both been involved with that. So I'll just start with Dr. Dua. You can, since I know you were really at the center of that. I'm impressed also you came up with the acronym, and it's very impressive. As a fan of dad jokes and everything like that, I'm very proud to see that. But I thought our listeners would really be interested just in that process, and especially with how recent and kind of groundbreaking a thing it was, and just to give people the opportunity to continue education in just this interactive setting. So if you don't mind just starting off, and we can kind of see where the conversation takes us, but starting off with this really exciting recent program, if you guys could both just touch on your involvement and how that has played out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having us. And also thank you for appreciating my nerd sense of humor. Viral.
Absolutely.
For Virtual Rheumatology Learning Collaborative. So really the idea was, you know, when the pandemic hit in March, and everything was kind of just shutting down, one of the most important things for me as a program director was trying to make sure that we have some sort of continued education for our fellows, and how are we going to do that? And everything was really quickly shifting virtual. So it was really a discussion I'd had with one of my fellows who gave me the idea. And then I sent an email to a couple of program directors, maybe like 10 or so. And within 24 hours, there was just such a large response. And so it became this national and then international program where we had a bunch of speakers, and the American College of Rheumatology joined on, and we're able to get moderators and speakers on all different topics and really broadcast it. I think there was like about 2,000 people that registered for the program, and it was just phenomenal, a phenomenal educational opportunity. So we hosted different, like I said, topics every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and people were logging in from so many different countries and just listening to the speakers and interacting with them and asking questions. So it was a really, really cool format, and it was amazing how quickly it took off. I mean, I think people really were excited to continue to learn, and it became, you know, sort of a pooling of resources, and everyone just really stepped up and helped out. So, and then it sort of spun off from there. And over the summer, with the new fellows coming in, our focus kind of shifted to really trying to teach these new folks rheumatology when, you know, not all of them are able to come into the clinic or go to their regular like didactic conferences and stuff like that. So it was just really a major effort on the part of so many people. But it has been an opportunity to really leverage technology and get access to a lot of learners so they can hear really national speakers on so many different topics from the convenience of their own home. So that's sort of what that program was about. And we're hoping to continue it going in different formats, you know, for at least the foreseeable future. So.
Yeah, I should clarify, I did virtually no work on this, but I have used it from, I've been on the user end of it, and I help direct, I'm the associate fellowship director here at Vanderbilt, and so I can speak to the utility of it for our fellows, and really, again, I mean, she's heard it enough, but Anisha is, this was a miracle of sorts. I keep a list, it's kind of a short list, of good things that have come out of the COVID-19 pandemic. And there really are not many great things on that right now, but this is one of those. And this is really something that has probably revolutionized the way our rheumatology fellows around the country and around the world learn. And I can speak to how high quality the talks have been from one of the early, I think it was, Anisha, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe the first, if not maybe the second talk was a vasculitis talk that you gave on ANCA vasculitis, I believe. And yeah. From there, yeah. I mean, that included, and from there, the talks have been by, you know, experts, topic experts, content experts on multiple rheumatic diseases. My fellows speak so highly of it, and it really is hopefully something that will continue on to be a great resource and continue to be refined and utilized by all the other future generations of rheumatologists.
Thank you, Kevin. No, I think it's gone amazingly well. And I am really, it's been such a collaborative effort, honestly, on so many people's parts, but it's just amazing how much people bought in and how it's taken off. So I know the list is short, but I'm glad that this is on it.
And I was just trying to give, you know, Kevin some credit, you know, I mean, you're part of it in one way or another, you know, so that just, yeah. You know, that's what we do. We try to pump everybody up in our own way. So, but yes, thank you for clarifying that.
I'd also like to hear just a little bit about like the telehealth, telemedicine aspect of, you know, of teaching, but also of treatment of patients right now during the pandemic, because I think that's been a pretty complex topic. I know Ben and I have talked about how we ourselves have used it. But Dr. Byram, if you want to start just kind of giving us a background on how that has changed the landscape of healthcare right now.
Yeah, that's this is probably on the list, too, of good things that have come out. And I have a lot of thoughts about telehealth and the virtual visits and things. I'll say that first off, it's just worth acknowledging that these diseases that we take care of, the patients that we take care of with these, they're very complex diseases. And telehealth, when used correctly, is a great resource to continue to care for these patients with these complex diseases. It does have its own challenges too. You know, I think when people are going well, when things are going well, and you know, it's more about monitoring and things, then I think the telehealth visits are great. But when there's an issue that you kind of need to work on, they can be really tough. I'd like to hear Anisha's thoughts on that eventually. I think that we used there was a time at which I was doing probably 90% telehealth during the early part of this pandemic. I think now I find myself maybe doing maybe 10 or 15%. But it's also worth acknowledging that each, you know, the hotspots are in different areas. And I know Chicago, for example, where Anisha is, was particularly heavy early on. And I know that they, I think, did a little bit more telehealth than us for a longer period of time. But yeah, it's a really good resource. You know, I should also say that Tennessee is a really strangely shaped state. You know, it's not uncommon for me to have patients that are, it's almost more common for me to have patients that are 2 and 3 hours away than it is right down the street. So, because they're coming from East Tennessee or West Tennessee. So telehealth is another great way to allow folks that have kind of travel restrictions or, and that sort of thing for us to continue the care to provide them. It, hopefully, you know, one of the big challenges right now is like our insurance is paying for it and the access to it and technology issues. But hopefully, again, this will be one of those things that as time goes on gets more and more refined and we get better and better at using it.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. I agree. It's been, you know, a different rate of use in different areas, depending on how things are going, you know, in your local environment with COVID. We definitely got hit pretty hard up front. So we were 100% virtual. I think it's interesting because it's something that has been discussed a lot, you know, telehealth, telerheumatology. But this pandemic really pushed us into it. And I think there's sort of a mixed bag in terms of pros and cons. In terms of access, I think it's definitely increased access, which you mentioned, Kevin. You know, people don't have to travel to get to clinic to be evaluated, which is great. But then, of course, there's all the technology that goes into it. And so then that also can be limiting access-wise because not everyone has, you know, all of the resources in terms of an iPhone or Zoom or whatever sort of format, Doximity. You know, there's so many different platforms that people are using. So so it can be a little limiting that way. But I think, you know, the patient show rate on the telephone has been really high. And that's a plus. I think some of the difficulties are that we've never really been formally trained in this. And so it's very much learning on the fly, both from the patient side and the provider side. You know, conversations aren't as smooth. And the huge thing that's missing for me is I can get a great history over the phone or over the video, but that physical exam piece, which as rheumatologists, I know we are very attuned to and find very important. It's really hard to evaluate, especially new patients, and especially when we're talking about patients with vasculitis with so many different manifestations. I think that becomes a real challenge. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll discuss this, but one of our biggest things is collaborating with other subspecialties. So that also is limiting in this virtual world where you can't necessarily, I know pulmonologists and ENT folks, and a lot of folks are really just stuck in the ICU, especially with the beginning when this pandemic hit. And so it was hard for patients to get their regularly scheduled radiologic exams or follow-up visits. And so I think there was a little bit of issues with that. And also just fear around the medications, right? We're learning more as we go through the pandemic about safety and, you know, things we should or shouldn't do and risk factors for different patients. But there were so many questions that were really hard to answer and still are hard to answer. Anyway, I think the virtual thing has been really useful because we need to be able to communicate with our patients without seeing them in some cases. But I think we're going to have to learn a lot from the best practices of this. So it'll be interesting to see how it's incorporated, you know, post-pandemic, whenever that might be.
Right. I will also add another big challenge I'm sure y'all are running into it is the training aspect of it. You know, teaching med students, residents, fellows, how to be doctors in this world is kind of a strange thing. I mean, I've had some of them sit in with the patient's consent, of course, on telehealth visits just to show them what it's like. I mean, that's step one. But, you know, I think exactly right. We get taught how to take really good care of patients in person and how to, you know, solve problems. But in this kind of virtual world, virtual medical world, they're just different challenges, and it's tough to teach somebody how to do it when you yourself are kind of learning the pitfalls and the ways to have successes. So I think that's another challenge we're going to have to deal with, is making sure that our trainees are, you know, learning how to take care of complex vasculitis patients, for example. But
right. Well, and I'm glad you mentioned access. That's something that I think is patients, like for Kaylee and I mean, trying to be self-advocates, that's such a big part of it. And at least the travel is a big part of it too. I can relate to that. I travel across state lines to see my doctor. So I know, and as Kaylee said, we've both had that experience to some degree. I know for me, as someone whose vasculitis is pretty well under control, I mean, I loved it because I didn't really require that physical in-person examination part of it. I also saved about $1,500, which I think any vasculitis patient would gladly take. And then not having to travel during a pandemic is also nice. So, I mean, for me, I think it's great. I hope it continues. It's nice to hear kind of the nuance, though, just because it's not every patient is going to be cut and dry, and it's not going to be just obvious as to what the right thing to do is. What was your experience, Kaylee? I feel like we've talked about it, but I almost feel like it's been at least like 4 months since we did that. So I honestly don't even really remember what your experience was like.
So I haven't used telemedicine myself. I know that we've talked about your use of it. I have a lot of friends in the medical field just by virtue of studying biology in undergrad. So they've talked about using it. I think it's a great tool. I'm pretty lucky in that I live very close to, I was treating at Georgetown Hospital, MedStar Georgetown for a while. So I'm lucky to have that, but also just generally it being in a hospital, the rheumatologist that I see, Dr. Quinn, who's now moved on to NIH, you know, I don't necessarily want to go there during a pandemic. So I've kind of held off a bit on my regular appointments. So I think that having the option for telemedicine would be really helpful in this particular case.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good, you're very responsible, Kaylee. So I know we all appreciate that. And there's obviously a few other topics I want to get to, but the thing I've just thought of, and it's kind of been on my mind with, and having gone through it myself with the whole telehealth aspect, is it's almost felt like, like black market isn't the way I describe it, but it's almost felt like just kind of going by the seat of their pants as far as you set these up. And at least for me, maybe because I did it in the middle, like right at the height, and my visit was mid-March, so before it was really established. But I kind of just got the sense of all these different systems and hospitals were saying, we'll just kind of like figure it out as we go. And it's kind of up to the individual doctor to decide. And because I had a good relationship with mine, we could kind of just sort of like skirt any rules or regulations and just sort of, you know, do it over FaceTime and just figure it out that way. So, I mean, is it still like that, or is this something that is more of a, like, going to be a permanent thing as opposed to, all right, let's just kind of like figure out some ways to get around whatever regulations just to take care of patients, and we're assuming things will be back to normal in a few months and we won't have to deal with this again. I would assume that's not really the case.
No, this is like, you've hit the nail on the head. It seems like every week or two, I don't know, Anisha, I assume, might have a similar experience. She can correct me, but you know, the regulations are changing. And you know, whether this insurance or that insurance will allow it, there's a constant kind of changing rule book, and it's tough to kind of keep up on it. The truth is, though, is exactly what you said, it is all about taking care of the patient. Nobody can tell me I can't talk with my patient on the phone and see how they're doing. Now, whether or not that gets kind of billed to insurance and all that is a totally separate issue, but it really just comes down to, you know, it is a tool that allows us, to take really good care of patients. And if that tool's not there, then we find some other way to do it. You know, even if it's just calling to check in or using the patient portal messages or whatever it may be. But you know, I think it will change over time. And it will depend on how the pandemic goes. And I just hope that, you know, regulatory agencies and insurance companies maintain this as a tool for us to keep in contact with our patients.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying, Kevin. I think, we all kind of had the hopes that this would be sort of something we could just figure out for a period of time, and whatever way we did it was fine, with the hopes that that the pandemic wouldn't last long. But clearly that's not the case. So, how this is going to be incorporated moving forward, I think it is a great resource, and definitely for folks who are doing well and pretty stable, it's great because you can check in with your patients, you can make sure things are moving along and they're getting the meds they need, they're getting the tests they need. Again, I think it is a lot more challenging for people with new symptoms, new diagnoses. The pandemic itself is so isolating, and I think that not being able to talk with your doctor in person can definitely be difficult for some folks, who don't have that established relationship that, Ben and Keeley, that you guys have with your docs. So again, pros and cons, but I do think that it's becoming a little bit more structured. It changes, the rules change every week, but we're kind of getting used to that. I think it's based on the local conditions and what your hospital's telling you to do. But it's been much better than not having that option, right? So I definitely feel like I've been able to at least take care of my patients in some way using all these different formats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in addition to this transition to telehealth, telemedicine that you're talking about, you also have both recently joined the Vasculitis Foundation Board, as we talked about in our intro and as Ben mentioned at the beginning of this episode. And I just wanted to hear a little bit about why it's important to you as rheumatologists and researchers to be involved so directly with the Vasculitis Foundation. And I don't know, Dr. Dua, if you want to start.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been involved with the VF for a while now, and it's I might be a little biased, but it's a phenomenal organization. Just the quality of the information that comes out of that foundation and Joyce as a leader, and just the people who collaborate across so many different subspecialties, they are just such a resource for providers and for patients and for families. And getting to be on the board is really super exciting. Especially during this time, I know we've been putting out a couple of webinars about, vasculitis and COVID-19. Me and Kevin did one a while ago, and I think we just taped another one last week. I don't know, all the days do kind of blur. But the Vasculitis Foundation has really just been so great at really, from an education perspective, teaching providers, teaching patients how to, advocate for themselves, how to manage their disease, questions to ask. And I think just being able to help improve and continue the quality work that's being done is super exciting. And then from the research perspective, with the VCRC and some of the collaborations that go into collecting, samples and information on patients that help us figure out, treatment decisions and how to best manage our patients. That's also a whole other aspect of it. How we fund fellows to get more involved in vasculitis, how we fund different new researchers who are doing exciting stuff in terms of discovery and vasculitis. I could go on for too long, so I'll stop, but I think it's just such an amazing foundation and it's constantly evolving, and I'm really excited to be on it and to be with Kevin as well.
Yeah, I echo those thoughts. I'm so excited to be able to participate on the board with Anisha and others. This is a massive resource for patients, families, providers, and the education work that the VF does and advocacy work that the VF does is really second to none, I think, in terms of patient advocacy groups. I'll say a couple of thoughts I have. I mean, I've benefited directly from the VF as well. They funded my vasculitis fellowship year at the Cleveland Clinic, and I feel a connection to the VF in that way that I really wanted to, I felt like I owe the VF a lot, and as many patients and providers and families do. And so this is one way that I see that I can give back and serve on this board. I think Joyce has always been, even before I was kind of a fellow at meetings and stuff, Joyce was just a phenomenal resource and has been a pleasure to work with. I've met Beth and Ed and others throughout all this. And it's just a really great group of people with a singular mission to help patients with vasculitis. I think Anisha and I both have that mission in our careers. We do it through our clinical work. We do it through our education work. We do it through our scholarly and research work. And then this is just another way to do it through some service work to help. I've learned a lot. You know, it was a transition for me because it's a different, I mean, I'm always patient focused, of course, but I mean, the focus on the VF board is so singular. You know, everything we do has to be for the patients. And so it's been a wonderful experience so far. And yeah, it's good and bad. It's good, of course, that it was during this time, you know, because I think this is a time at which patients, providers, families need as much guidance as ever. So I felt really, really fortunate to be able to participate so far.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to hear you both share. I think a lot of the same feelings that for patients, and Kaylee, I think would agree with me on this, that we have felt as far as the benefits we've gotten from the VF as patients. And it, you know, to me, it just seems like this ongoing sense of credibility that, I mean, the VF has always had, but just that increase in it where, and I can't speak to this totally now just because I'm not a huge social media guy, but I just know, thinking back to my initial diagnosis, you know, seeing those Facebook groups and patients kind of spitballing ideas with each other, and it was great to have people to connect with. But at the same time, I mean, you know, you're just a patient, and you don't really know a lot of specific things necessarily that really work. So it, you know, to see that, and I just look to the actually our last guest here on Vasculitis Visionaries, Dr. Putman and Dr. Dua, you guys were just on the COVID webinar. I think that was just a couple weeks ago that the VF put on. So it kind of seems like, and I mean, we'll kind of transition into some of the current stuff you guys are looking into as far as research, but it seems like, and you can, COVID is, I guess, a tangible way to look at the impact here, but it does just seem like, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, but the fact that increased amount of credibility, it just helps patients when they're looking at resources like this. And instead of kind of like, hey, here's a fellow patient who has my same disease, like, what do you think I should do? It's more like, all right, we've got these direct people who can tell us point blank, all right, whether it's COVID, whether it's the late, you know, the latest in research development, like, this is the kind of authority on it. So I don't know if you've seen like a change in that thinking, but at least from my end, I don't know, it feels like, definitely feels like progress has been made on that front. And I know for you, Dr. Dua, I mean, I've known you for 4 or 5 years, and you've obviously been involved really since the start of your career with that, as you mentioned. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a really good point. There is so much just information out there, right? And especially for folks with like new diagnoses or, you know, dealing with any issues, really. You know, they're talking about the pandemic, but there's also like an information pandemic, and there's so much out there, and not all of it is reliable, and getting access to something that you can trust and, you know, just a sense of community that the Vasculitis Foundation provides. One of the first things I tell my patients, you know, as soon when I'm talking about their new diagnosis, is to go onto the Vasculitis Foundation website and read about it and learn different information from there, because, you know, it's overwhelming. And I think there people feel like there's so much out there, and then at the same time, nothing out there. And so I think the VF does such a great job of really having, you know, vetted information that patients can rely on, and just really has been pushing the envelope also in terms of building a sense of community. I mean, this podcast is one example of that, you know, but really trying to find like new and innovative ways to reach people, whether it's through the webinars, this, and I know we've been talking about different initiatives we can try to do. So they're really on the cutting edge of a lot of stuff and really reliable. So I think it's an amazing resource, and not even just for patients, honestly, it's an amazing resource for myself. I can get, you know, good handouts to give to folks about medications, about disease states. You know, in one visit, you don't necessarily have time to go through every single thing. And so, just knowing that there's reliable information out there that patients can access and depend on is really comforting to me. So I think, I again, phenomenal organization.
I agree in total.
We love to hear it. And something else that we'd like to cover in this podcast and that Ben always teases me about is how much I like nerding out about the science aspects of what our guests do. So since we have a little bit of time left, I'd love to just hear about the nitty-gritty part of your work. You know, what kind of research are you looking into? What questions are you excited about asking? And if Dr. Byram, if you could start.
Sure. Well, a big, up until maybe 6 months ago, a big part of the scholarly work I was involved with was the ACR Guidelines Committee. I know you were probably having others on, and Anisha was on, and it's been this big push. And for those patients and providers that are listening to this that haven't heard about that so far, that the publications are coming, and that we'll, you know, there will be a lot of information coming out of that. But that was probably the biggest lift that I've been involved with in quite some time. But we had seven vasculitis disease states with, I think, over 120 questions we were trying to answer, putting all the literature together. Anisha and I were both on the literature review committee for that and looked at how many papers was it in total that we looked at? It was 10,000 or something.
I've blocked out the number, but I know it was more than 10,000. Yeah. It was a lot.
Maybe 10 or 13,000 papers and kind of putting it all together. We had a great team. I mean, Reem Mustafa from Kansas was the leader of the literature review portion and had an awesome team there that led us through the process. And so we produced a product that we gave to the voting committee that then kind of discussed and hashed out the details of what ended up being the final recommendations. And so that we did all three ANCA-associated vasculitis diseases. We did polyarteritis nodosa, Kawasaki's disease, and both large vessel vasculitis syndrome, so Takayasu's arteritis and giant cell arteritis. And this whole project was led by Dr. Chung from UCSF. It's an important thing to talk about because it being just a massive resource for patients and providers going forward. But this was a huge, huge success for the Vasculitis Foundation, who sponsored these guidelines. And again, goes to reiterate everything Anisha and I have said about this, just being really a premier organization to advocate for and advocate for the optimization of care of these patients.
Yeah, I can add on. Yes, this was a huge undertaking, and I know Ben, you were on the patient panel, and we worked together there. But it was great. There was feedback from patients. There was a lot of involvement from experts across the nation. So I'm really excited for the papers to eventually come out, I think it'll be a great, phenomenal resource. So yeah, I did spend a lot of time working on this project over the last, year or two. I think, one of the things I'm working on at the Vasculitis Center at Northwestern, I know you had Dr. Putman on last week, and he was talking a little bit about his research in giant cell arteritis. So we're hoping to collaborate because we were going to work on that together at Northwestern, and now he'll be starting the center over in Milwaukee, and we're hoping to work together to basically look at tissue in giant cell arteritis and try to see if there's certain basically like cellular signatures or protein signatures, looking at RNA to see if there are ways, which I think this is really the future of research in vasculitis. Are there markers or are there something on a cellular level that can help us figure out, what patients are going to respond to certain medications or which patients might have certain manifestations of the disease. And again, I know that's a huge concept, but starting at sort of a small level, we're trying to look at temporal artery tissue and see if we can find information in the tissue itself that can give us information about patient populations, outcomes, and clinical information based on sort of genetic profiles. So that's one thing that I'm working on with Dr. Putman. And again, that'll be a nice collaborative effort moving forward. And hopefully if it works and if we are able to use the technology appropriately to answer some of those questions, we can try applying it to other disease states, where we are able to get tissue like ANCA vasculitis and looking at kidney tissue and stuff like that. Again, it's a moving target, but that's one thing that we're working on. And then I'm trying to develop a registry to just gather patient information so we can start asking more questions and looking for answers within our patient population. I think there's so much learned. We've come such a long way in the last, I'd say, 5-10 years. But one of the questions that keeps coming up from patients is, you know, how long do I need to be on my medicines? You know, and rightfully so, you want to kind of know the prognosis moving forward when you get a diagnosis and look into the future. And it's really hard for us as physicians or providers to answer some of those questions. And I'm hoping that some of the research that we're doing now will help us to have more insight into, you know, which patients will respond to certain treatments, how long, you know, are there certain groups of patients who might be able to come off of medicines quicker, or, you know, really are at high risk of relapse and should be maintained on medicines for longer. So there's so much to learn, but I think as a community, we're doing a great job in terms of trying to chip away at those questions.
It is really, it's great to hear. I trust, speaking of Dr. Putman, he hasn't been soliciting you for your carpentry efforts, I hope, with his house he's like tearing down.
No, he sends me videos once in a while, and it looks like a beast. So
it's good to hear. Obviously, you don't want him overstepping his bounds, and all of a sudden half the vasculitis community is over in suburban Milwaukee, just chopping down. Yeah. Old house. No, but it's good to hear. And we haven't yet really gotten super deep on this podcast as far as the ACR guidelines, just because we know they're still ongoing. It's a huge project. But it's one of those things that I think anybody involved with it, whether it's on the medical professional side or the patient side, and for me getting to be on one of those panels, you do realize how big of a, not only an undertaking it is, but just how important it is when you look at some of the, because we're posed all these questions and it's like, do you agree with this statement or that statement? And some of them were just so off base based on how much has changed in the last decade, really, with various research, that you realize how, when people are being kind of guided towards specific paths of treatments and just learning, getting a sense of knowledge about it, how much we still need to kind of bring all that general education up to speed. So I think everybody who has any sort of connection to vasculitis is and should be very excited about that in the future. But it's kind of great to hear you guys give your thoughts on that as well. So I'm glad we could kind of get into that a little bit more. I feel like every month, Kaylee can attest to this. I feel like I'm like, hey, Joyce, any update? I can't wait to hear about this. I know it's a pandemic, but I need answers. Come on.
it should be coming out, but I think there's, like you mentioned, there's been so much development in the last 5 to 10 years, but I mean, even from when we first did the lit review till like a year later, when we reviewed anything that had come out in the past year, there was so much more information. And so, it's an exciting time again to be interested in vasculitis for sure. But there's so much changing so rapidly that it can be, a little bit like drinking from a fire hose type of feeling when you're trying to collect information and figure out the best way to disseminate that and how much weight to put on each individual trial. So, I think that patient panel was super interesting, hearing a very different perspective than what I'm used to hearing. I think the more different angles you can have incorporated into developing these guidelines, the better. I do look forward to the actual publication coming out, so there'll be more fodder for our discussion.
Absolutely. It's funny because there's been people that have been working on it longer than any of us have. and so I know that they're, the folks on kind of the core committee and things, this is just it's a project that's probably been in the making 5 or 6 years. So I know that, there's just a lot of people that are excited about it.
Yeah, it's just a selfish thing for me. I know that the people actually working on it are the ones who they deserve to actually see this everything kind of come to fruition, which will soon. But I know, and Kaylee, I know you're excited about that as well. This has been really, as always, I feel like we get so much from all of these conversations, and this episode no difference. I really want to thank both of you, Dr. Stu and Byron, for coming on and just sharing some of your insights. And I think kind of, especially for the medical professionals who listen to this podcast, I hope there's been a lot of good things for them to kind of take away, as far as just not only the short term and as far as treatment and patient interactions go, but also just for the long term. So as always, and I know you guys are both so busy with the myriad of different things you're doing, so we want to be respectful of your time, not take up any more of it. But thank you to both of you for coming on, and we certainly are wishing you all of the best as far as your ongoing research and your continued VF board involvement.
Well, thanks for having us. It's anytime.
Yeah. No, it was wonderful. It was great to talk to you guys always. And yeah, thank you for including us and having us on this podcast.
Okay, thanks to our guests again today, Drs. Dua and Byram. A lot of fun as always. I didn't ask them, Kaylee, if they know Dr. Fauci. I know you. That's, I feel like a prerequisite question for you and all that. I don't think they do, but I don't know. I'm sorry. I failed in my duties of asking that, because I know the look on your face when you find out any of our guests know him based on past experience.
Hey, as somebody who benefits greatly from ANCA-associated vasculitis treatment, I will always be a Fauci fan. So that and public health together, I'm ready to interview him. So Dr. Fauci, if you're listening, you know, we'll have you on whenever you're available.
Right. I'm sure he's not busy at all with anything. I'm sure that that'll be coming up soon. A great in-depth conversation as always with our guests. And we want to thank GSK and Genentech, of course, as always, for putting this episode on. When we come back in a couple weeks' time, we'll have a guest who's also a professional, but also who is also a patient in Dr. Velma Mockett. She'll join us from Calgary. Really interesting conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. We'll get really in-depth and deep on mental health as a whole and how that intersects with vasculitis from both a patient and a treatment perspective. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, Kaylee, hopefully the next time I'm going to talk to you, it'll be September when we talk to Velma Mockett. So hopefully life is, I don't know. I say hopefully, I don't know if it will be looking any better, but you know, keep the fingers crossed. We'll be positive, right?
Yeah. Wear masks, people. Come on now.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, of course. If you haven't, if you're just hearing that advice now, there you go, Kaylee. You're getting the people on the right track.
Groundbreaking.
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, Kaylee. For all of you listening, thanks again for subscribing, listening to the podcast. We cannot wait to bring our next episode to you. So until then, for Kaylee, I'm Ben, saying so long here on Vasculitis Visionaries.